As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome or welcome back to the Straight A Nursing Podcast. I'm Nurse Mo, and this is where I teach concepts and share tips on how to thrive in nursing school and at the bedside. So today we're taking a little dive into pharmacology, looking at a complication of local anesthetics called local anesthetic systemic toxicity. Now, before we do that, let's take a quick minute for our listener shout out. And this one goes out to Missy, who says, I've been a nurse for 11 years, and I have been listening to this podcast on the regular since I discovered it. I love that it brings me back to the basics. And let's face it, even after nursing as long as I have, I still learn something new each time I listen. Thanks, Nurse Mo. Well, a big thanks right back to you, Missy, for taking the time to share your feedback and love of the podcast. And I 100% agree. We've been nurses for about the same amount of time. And honestly, I learn something every time I create an episode. We're always students when we're in this profession. So again, thanks so much, Missy. All right, are you ready to dive into local anesthetic systemic toxicity? We're gonna start by getting a report on our patient. Mr. Thompson is 62 years old. He's just had a left knee replacement surgery where he received a spinal block utilizing bupivacaine and an injection of bupivacaine at the surgical site. He was stable throughout the procedure and comes to you in the PACU on 8 liters simple face mask with an OPA in place. His past medical history includes hypertension and osteoarthritis. Your initial assessment reveals no response to stimulation, regular respirations with adequate depth, and no accessory muscle use. Vital signs are heart rate 54, respiratory rate 10, SpO2 100%, blood pressure 112 over 62, and temp 35.8 degrees Celsius. The dressing is clean, dry, and intact. So as you can see from this scenario, Mr. Thompson, he had knee replacement surgery and he's already received bupivacaine in two different routes. He got a spinal block and he got an injection of local at that surgical site. So what are local anesthetics? Local anesthetics are medications that block nerve impulses and those pain signals so that they're not transmitted to the brain. The pain still happens. It doesn't go to the brain though, so the patient's unaware of it. The result is that the anesthetized area is numb and pain is controlled. Now, a key way to know if a medication is a local anesthetic is that it ends in the suffix caine, C-A-I-N-E. Common local anesthetics are ropivacaine, bupivacaine, and lidocaine. Now, local anesthetics are used all over the place. They're used in dentistry. They're used in surgery. They're used at the bedside for invasive procedures that kind of hurt, like central line insertion and placement of stitches. They're also widely used postoperatively and even during labor and delivery, including that cesarean delivery. Local anesthetics also have multiple routes of administration. This could include injection. So a great example of this is when the dentist injects lidocaine prior to drilling on your tooth and filling a cavity. It could also be topical on the skin, such as Emla cream, E-M-L-A. Emla cream applied prior to IV insertion may be utilized to lessen the pain of that procedure, or simply a lidocaine patch, which patients can get over the counter, people can get that over the counter, and use that for something like back pain. It could also be on the skin of the airway or the tissues of the airway. For example, lidocaine is utilized prior to bronchoscopy to diminish the gag reflex. It could be administered via an epidural. Now, with an epidural, the medication diffuses through the dura into the CSF to cause analgesia. A great example of this would be a local anesthetic used, maybe in combination with an opioid, being injected into the epidural space during labor or infused into the epidural space during labor. There's also intrathecal administration. This is also more commonly referred to as spinal anesthesia or a spinal block. Intrathecal anesthetics are injected into the CSF and the spinal canal for total pain control, complete loss of sensation, and loss of movement. So that's a distinction. With epidural, the patient can still move. With intrathecal or a spinal, they're not moving. So like with an epidural, the patient may be able to move the legs, maybe not walk super safely, but there is some movement. With a spinal, there's no movement. So a great example of this is a patient undergoing knee surgery like Mr. Thompson. He got a spinal block to control pain during the procedure, and it will also last into that immediate post-operative time as well. Another mode of administration is perineural. The medication, in this case, is injected into the tissue surrounding the nerves. A great example of this would be a patient who gets a peripheral nerve block after surgery. And then intravenous. Local anesthetics can also be administered intravenously to provide a regional block to an extremity for brief surgical procedures. Note that generally when this occurs, a tourniquet is utilized above the site of surgery to help prevent that local anesthetic from reaching systemic circulation. So that's why the procedure has to be brief. An example of this would be a patient undergoing carpal tunnel surgery. They may receive that regional block through IV administration of a local anesthetic, but then we've got the tourniquet on so that it doesn't go into the whole system. Now, just because local anesthetics are local does not mean systemic toxicity does not occur. Local anesthetic systemic toxicity, which you will often see abbreviated as LAST or LAST, occurs when local anesthetics extend into the system at toxic levels. In most cases, it typically occurs due to the physician accidentally injecting the medication into the intravascular space when they meant to just inject it into the tissue. However, it can also be from locally administered overdose, which leads to systemic toxicity. So any of those routes that we talked about could potentially lead to systemic toxicity. Now, one thing to know when you're taking care of a patient who did get a local, you might see that they also got some epinephrine injected. And the reason for this is that the epinephrine will cause vasoconstriction at that site. And what do you think the benefit of this is? It helps prevent the anesthetic from going beyond that localized area. So when you see bupivacaine and epinephrine given, it's not like your patient needed epinephrine because they were having issues with their heart. They likely got that epinephrine injected locally to cause vasoconstriction to keep the bupivacaine or whatever anesthetic is being used from entering systemic circulation. So now you might be wondering, well, how does this happen? So LAST or local anesthetic systemic toxicity, essentially it occurs due to an imbalance between absorption and biotransformation of the anesthetic. So if you've never heard the term biotransformation before, that's basically the metabolic process that takes place, and most of the time, or generally this is taking place in the liver, and it's that metabolic process that helps facilitate the drug being excreted. So we have an imbalance between the absorption and basically the excretion of the anesthetic. So increased absorption may be due to injection into tissue that has a lot of vascularization. Or when utilized in a patient who, say they have very low cardiac output when it's given to the patient, and then we fix their cardiac output, we have a sudden increase in cardiac output, well, that could increase absorption in that imbalanced way. Additionally, elderly patients tend to have prolonged absorption due to things like decreased muscle mass, and patients with renal disease and liver disease obviously aren't going to be processing and excreting the medication efficiently, so toxic plasma levels can occur. Some general ideas of patients that are going to be at higher risk for local anesthetic overdose are the very young and the elderly, as I just mentioned, and patients with comorbidities, including heart, lung, liver, and renal disease. Pregnancy is also a risk factor for local anesthetic systemic toxicity, and this is because the increased protein levels in the blood that occur in pregnancy can lead to increased unbound levels of the anesthetic, and this leads to toxicity. Additionally, metabolic syndromes place patients at higher risk for LAST as well. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the pathophysiology of LAST as well as signs and symptoms and what you, as the amazing nurse, are going to do about it.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Calm Cove podcast can help you sleep deeply all night long. Calm Cove has deeply relaxing meditation music and ambient sounds like ocean waves and crackling fires. All of our episodes are designed to help you relax and to fall asleep fast. Calm Cove is brought to you by the team behind Sleep Cove, the sleep podcast that consists of spoken word hypnosis, meditation, and stories. So if you want to listen to a beautiful soundscape tonight, search for Calm Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see how we're helping millions of people relax and go to sleep every night.
So now let's dive into a little bit about the pathophysiology. We don't need to go into ion channels and all that complexity, but the key things to know here are that two key consequences of local anesthetic systemic toxicity are cardiac toxicity and central nervous system toxicity. Now, cardiac toxicity occurs most typically due to accidental injection of that local anesthetic into the intravascular space, though it can occur from locally administered overdose as well. Now, the medication binds to and inhibits sodium channels. And remember, sodium has a key player in cardiac cell action potential. So when we inhibit this, we're inhibiting that influx of sodium that is necessary for that cardiac cell action potential. And this leads to cardiac dysfunction and ventricular arrhythmias. Now, looking at CNS toxicity, a leading theory suggests that central nervous system toxicity occurs due to disturbances related to specific potassium channels in that neuronal tissue, causing them to be more excitable. The effect most often seen in patients is seizures, though other central nervous system symptoms can occur. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, but let's go back for just a minute here and see what's going on with Mr. Thompson. So Mr. Thompson is now awake. The OPA is removed and he's enjoying some of those amazing recovery room ice chips and waiting for the effects of his spinal block to wear off. The pain team, which consists of an anesthesiologist and specially trained nurses, come to the bedside to insert a catheter for local perineural delivery of ropivacaine. Mr. Thompson receives his first bolus of ropivacaine and a few minutes later complains of a metallic taste in his mouth and numbness in his lips. His speech seems a bit slow and he seems mildly confused. So even if you didn't know anything about LAST, you would look at what's going on with Mr. Thompson and think, this is abnormal. Something's not right here. So let's look at the signs and symptoms of local anesthetic systemic toxicity. So early central nervous system symptoms, and these generally occur before cardiac symptoms, but not always. But looking at early CNS symptoms, this can include confusion, a feeling of unease in your patient, and that's not uncommon in patients after surgery. They're sometimes just kind of out of sorts, so you'd have to be very observant to notice this. They're also often confused because they just had anesthesia, right? So you have to be very, very observant. They could also state that they're feeling dizzy. They could get agitated. They may say they have ringing in their ears or numbness and tingling around the mouth. Again, like Mr. Thompson, they could have a metallic taste in the mouth and some dysarthria, some difficulty with speech or some slow speech. And then signs of cardiac toxicity generally indicate a more severe level of systemic toxicity and can include tachycardia and hypertension that may occur initially, followed by bradycardia and hypotension that can be severe. The patient may have arrhythmias. They may complain of shortness of breath. They could have ventricular ectopy. They could even have ventricular tachycardia. You may notice a wide QRS complex or changes to the ST segment if your patient is on a monitor. Now, if not caught and managed early, serious manifestations include respiratory arrest. It includes seizure, as was mentioned earlier. Ventricular fibrillation can occur, cardiovascular collapse, coma, and death. So you definitely want to be catching local anesthetic systemic toxicity early on. So how do we treat LAST when we suspect or recognize that it's happening? The most important intervention is to stop any local anesthetics that are infusing. Now, not to say that LAST can't occur from the patient getting their local anesthetic delivered. They're not getting a continuous infusion. They could still have LAST later on. But if they have something infusing, we obviously want to stop that. So for example, a post-op patient who just had knee surgery, like Mr. Thompson, who got that catheter placed, so he got intrathecal bupivacaine, he got a little bit of local in the OR, and now he's in the recovery room getting that ropivacaine infusing via a little portable pump. So with a patient like that, if they start developing these signs and symptoms of LAST, the first thing I'm going to do is disconnect that pump or at least clamp it, turn it off so that he doesn't get any more local anesthetic. And then the very next thing I'm doing is I'm getting a set of vital signs and calling the MD to notify them immediately. And there's a couple of reasons why I want to notify them immediately. First of all, this could be a very serious complication. The patient could need aggressive management. And then secondly, even without any complications, maybe it's a very mild case, the patient's still going to require alternative pain management. So step one, stop anything that is currently infusing, and step two, notifying the MD and doing those things very, very quickly. Now, initial management of local anesthetic systemic toxicity includes supporting the patient's airway, their oxygenation, their circulation, all of those key things. So some specific things that the MD may order could include oxygenation to prevent hypoxia and acidosis. The patient may need ventilation. If it's a very severe case, they may need mechanical ventilation. Now, if they have a seizure, benzodiazepines may be used. And we want to do that, A, because we want to get the seizure to stop. But with that prolonged muscle activity, we could get acidosis. And we always want to prevent acidosis. So if the seizures persist, maybe they get some benzodiazepines, the seizures don't stop, the MD could utilize a paralytic agent to halt muscular activity. Bradycardia could be addressed with medications that increase the heart rate. Hypotension could be addressed with medications that increase blood pressure. And amiodarone may be utilized for ventricular arrhythmias if those are present. And then another therapy that is being talked about more is lipid emulsion therapy. And this may be utilized in patients who have arrhythmias or prolonged seizures. And the study suggests that it works by drawing the lipid-soluble anesthetic agent out of that cardiac tissue. And then in severe cases, cardiopulmonary bypass may be needed until the medication is cleared from the system. So before we close out, let's check back in with Mr. Thompson and you clamp his ropivacaine tubing, anticipating that the MD is going to discontinue that. The infusion is stopped and you notify the MD. Vital signs are heart rate 75, blood pressure 122 over 72, respiratory rate 18, SpO2 92% on room air. The MD comes to the bedside and determines that Mr. Thompson's symptoms are mild. Remember, he had a little bit of confusion. He had some metallic taste in his mouth and feeling a little bit of numbness in his lips. The MD is basically stating he's having mild symptoms. So she orders supplemental oxygen to maintain his oxygen levels above 95%, gives him alternative pain medication options, and immediately discontinues the local anesthetic. He's admitted to the ICU for close observation overnight, and he ultimately has a full recovery. Good job. So there you have it, your quick overview of local anesthetic systemic toxicity. You are probably most likely to have patients who are at risk for LAST in that post-op period, and that would be your patient that has some kind of a local anesthetic being delivered as an infusion, maybe either through that elastomeric pump or through bolus infusions, through a portable pump, or even an epidural local anesthetic. So keep a very close eye on those patients and take any of their CNS changes or cardiac changes very seriously until you can prove otherwise that it's not related to the local anesthetic. So that is it for us today. I hope to see you back here next week, where we are going to be talking about how to analyze a case study. I know this is something that a lot of students struggle with, especially maybe newer students. So we're doing a deep dive into how to have a systematic way to analyze a case study. So I will see you back here for that. Bye for now. This podcast is brought to you by Straight A Nursing, a proud member of the Airwave Media Network. For more educational podcasts, check out airwavemedia.com. And for more nursing-related content, go to straightanursingstudent.com.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Sleep Cove podcast can help you. Hi, I'm Christopher Fitton, the voice and clinical hypnotherapist behind Sleep Cove. Sleep Cove features sleep hypnosis, meditations, and bedtime stories, all designed to help those of you who struggle at night to achieve a restful and peaceful night's sleep. Search for Sleep Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see why Sleep Cove helps millions of people sleep deeply all night long.